The Curbsiders Teach podcast is for entertainment, education, and information purposes only, and the topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any diseases or conditions. Furthermore, the views and statements expressed on this podcast are solely those of the speakers and should not be interpreted to reflect the official policy or position of any entity. You should always do your homework and give us any feedback.
Welcome back to the Curbsiders Teach Season 5, our series on health professions education. We are very excited to be recording here in person at the Alliance for Academic Internal Medicine, AIM Week 25 in New Orleans. I'm Dr. Molly Hoyblom, joined in person by my co-host, Dr. Ira Krzyzanowskaya. On today's episode, we'll discuss improving conferences for health professions trainees with Drs. Rebecca Garber and Beth Ford. Before we get started with that, Ira, will you remind the audience what we do on the show?
You got it, Molly. We are the health professions podcast for all things education. We use expert interviews to bring you teaching pearls and practice-changing knowledge to inspire the next generation of clinician educators. And we have an amazing conversation with our guests, Drs. Beth Ward and Rebecca Garber, covering strategies, all the strategies, really, for improving didactics and making them engaging.
Yeah, and it was so fun to hear both of their approaches and learn from both of their workshops that they presented here at the Alliance for Academic Internal Medicine, and to hear a chief resident's perspective and then an associate program director's perspective just really, I think, rounded out the conversation and gave us a lot to think about. And I think it will give you all a lot to bring home. So much. So our first guest, Dr. Rebecca Garber, was born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia, attended medical school at the Lewis Katz School of Medicine at Temple University in Philadelphia, and internal medicine residency at the University of Illinois in Chicago, where she is currently serving as the Medical Education and Research Chief Resident. Dr. Garber is passionate about medical education and created the website When the Beat Drops as a resident's guide to the CCU. In July, she will begin her cardiology fellowship at Ohio State University.
And Dr. Elizabeth Beth Ward grew up in Chicago and attended medical school at the University of Illinois at Chicago, then residency and chief residency at the University of Chicago North Shore program, which is now Endeavor Health. Since residency, Beth has stayed on as a primary care physician caring for the underserved in the community and serves as the internal medicine residency associate program director. We're excited to bring you this season of Curbsiders Teach with the support of and in partnership with the Alliance of Academic Internal Medicine. And a reminder that most episodes are available for CME credit through VCU Health CE for all healthcare professionals at curbsiders.vcuhealth.org. Thank you to all our Patreon members. If you love the Curbsiders family content and you haven't joined yet, please consider supporting us in continuing to create this amazing resource. So without further ado, let's get to it.
Yay! Well, thank you both for joining us. We're so excited to be sitting down in person here at the Alliance for Academic Internal Medicine AIM Week 25 in New Orleans. Dr. Garber, we'll start with you. Do you mind if we call you Rebecca for this?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. And Dr. Ward, are you okay if we call you Beth today?
Of course, yes.
Fantastic. Well, we'd like to ask some basic questions just to let our listeners get to know you a little bit better. Beth, could you give us a one-liner to describe yourself and maybe include something from outside of medicine?
Sure. Yes. I'm Beth Ward, and I'm a primary care physician in the Chicagoland area at Endeavor Health. I work with a primarily underserved patient population. And then I also get the wonderful privilege of working alongside some amazing residents in our internal medicine residency. And I guess something from outside of medicine is that I am a theme park enthusiast. I specifically love Disney parks, anything Imagineering. I love the cross between the innovation, the tech, the artistry, and the entertainment to make cool attractions. So if you ever want to talk Disney or Imagineering, I'm totally down for it.
Wow. Do you have a favorite theme park?
This is a very loaded question, but thank you for asking. There are so many that I enjoy. I think the classic answer would be, of course, where the magic is at the Magic Kingdom.
Ooh,
but,
yeah.
You know, Epcot is a little bit more sophisticated. So that one I also really enjoy. But really anywhere where I can spend time with my family is where the magic is.
And Rebecca, do you want to share a one-liner about yourself and maybe including also something outside of medicine?
Of course. I'm actually someone who's been in a lot of different places. I'm originally from Atlanta. I was in New York for undergrad, Philly at Temple for medical school, and UIC for my residency, and now doing a chief year. I'm the medical education and research chief there. You know, one of the things that I have found throughout all the places that I've gone is I really love medical education and teaching. and cardiology. So, you know, one of the things I've actually tried to do and started doing in my free time is I actually created a website. It's called whenthebeatdrops.org, and it's a residence guide to the CCU. And so one of the things I actually do in my free time is I draw the pictures for that website. And so I do that while I binge TV. So I'm being productively unproductive, however you want to say that. It's given me the opportunity to teach, but also to explore some artistic talents as well. And then obviously I'm from Chicago, so the food scene, anything I can do, anywhere I can eat, I'm a happy camper.
It's amazing. What are you binge watching right now while drawing?
The Pit.
Oh, yeah.
Great show. Mm-hmm. Great show. And White Lotus, so.
Of course. No spoilers.
Did you watch the finale last night?
No. I'm so excited. It's a great show, and I think that it really does a great job kind of showing what we as doctors experience every single day in terms of, you know, the challenges of the healthcare system. So, love it.
Nice. Well, how has it been so far for you here at the Alliance for Academic Internal Medicine in week? What's been your experience or things that you've really enjoyed?
I think one of the things I really love about it is just the collaboration. And, you know, you have so many different programs. You know, you have the big academic programs and you have the small community programs. And we all have the same problems and the same challenges. And I think it's really cool to be able to talk to other people from different places mm-hmm. to see what they're doing and see what their experiences are. And I think it also just gives us an appreciation for our own program. So I really love that.
I agree. I think that's what's so special about AIM is like bringing all these people together who are jazzed about education, and everybody can share, yes, their challenges, but also the way that they overcame those barriers and opportunities. And I feel like we've learned a ton this week about that. Beth, how was your experience at AIM Week 25? Anything surprised you? Take-home points?
Yeah, so far it has been off to a great start. I went to a great workshop about using ambient AI in the outpatient clinic, which is super relevant to me because that's my world. So that was really interesting to see how, same thing, everyone is kind of deciding how best to use that technology. When is it appropriate to start with our residents? Is there going to be any hindrance in their learning? Is it going to be just all fantastic? So that was a great discussion. And then I thought the opening plenary this morning was also fantastic with Dr. Lisa Rosenbaum, right? That was really, really great. And I think probably timely for our discussion today when she was talking about how a lot of learners and trainees are feeling like a lot of their day-to-day work is not, they don't find it educational. So hopefully we're going to help with that, with some of our thoughts today.
Yeah, totally.
Well, great lead-in into our topic. So you were both presenting on improving conferences and improving the educational kind of didactics for learners. And so, Beth, you and your colleagues are going to present conferences beyond the standard lecture, creating engaging educational experiences. And I'm curious how you got into this topic, and maybe feel free also to shout out your co-presenters.
Yes, absolutely. We are really excited to present upcoming. And this is with our program leadership from the University of Chicago at Endeavor. And this is with our program director, Dr. Lisa Kayan, and one of our other associate program directors, Dr. Catherine Glunz, and I will all be presenting. And I guess how we decided to apply to present was that we were excited to share some of the successes that we've had with our conferences. We've been coming as a team for many years to AIM, and we've been inspired by others. And so we're hoping to inspire some new folks as well. But how we got into thinking about making our conferences more engaging, we were just talking about this yesterday. And you know, some of it was just born out of necessity. We saw things in our curriculum that were maybe we were missing or were not being presented in maybe the most engaging way that was allowing our learners to retain the information. We also have an academic half day, which is wonderful. It's a whole half day, but it's many hours long. So, you know, that highlighted for us the need to make sure that our conferences were really engaging because everyone's attention span is waning nowadays. Uh-huh. So we just really were excited to share what we could with the successes that we had. And we hope that we inspire some folks along the way.
And Rebecca, you also just presented here at AIM Week 25, getting ROSC, Return of the Successful Conference with colleagues. Can you share a little bit about what inspired you to focus on this material, and definitely shout out your co-presenters as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember last year when I came as a rising chief, and everyone was talking about how they just can't get their residents to come to conference. And, you know, a little selfishly also as the medical education chief, I was like, you know, if I'm planning it, I want them to come. And, you know, I think we see a lot of times where we have really fantastic presenters, you know, giving all this information, and our residents aren't coming because they have all these clinical duties and, you know, all these other things that make it hard for them to come. And so what we decided to do was we actually met all the chiefs who were in Chicago last year. And so, you know, we got together with, so Mike Siegel, who is at UIC with me, we partnered with Anuj Choksi, who is at Northwestern, and Austin Kaboff, who is at Loyola. And so we really were trying to collaborate to figure out a way, how do we solve this problem? So, yeah. It was a really great presentation, standing room only. So I think we had a lot of really great discussions.
Love that. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that getting ROSC is like one of my favorite. I have many favorite titles at AIM, but I think this was one of my favorites. So way to play on that. And also with the, you know, the beat dropping too. I sense the theme.
That's
the cardiac
the
theme.
Is
yes.
So good.
I have to admit, I only work in the outpatient setting, and so Ira and I were talking about it, and I was like, "What is ROSC? Like, I don't even know what that is." She's like, "Return of circulation."
Yeah. As somebody who is like very, you know, a recovering perfectionist, and getting ROSC was like the most important thing as a code leader. I feel like ROSC is like forever. I don't know, just burned into my brain. And so I thought that was very clever.
Yeah, half the success of a conference is the name. So
totally.
Yeah, Michael Siegel came up with it. So
Shout out to
great,
him.
Really great.
Yeah, well, let's jump into how do we actually try to improve these conferences for our learners. So we'll start with a case from Cashlag Memorial. Megan is a new training program leader and educator who's tasked with improving the didactic experience for the trainees in her program. The task is daunting to her because she has heard from learners that they don't find conferences valuable. They share that they would rather use this time to finish patient care and feel like they can just learn all that they need to know by listening to the Curbsiders Internal Medicine podcast.
All of them.
So this sentiment is commonly heard by educators in leadership positions across the country. Rebecca, what do you see as some of the causes for declines in learner participation during in-learning conferences?
Absolutely. I think more and more we're expecting more from our residents. And, you know, with this expectation, you know, we have to be able to protect the time for them. So, you know, our residents are leaders of a team. They're educators in of themselves. They're hospital employees. So they're trying to admit and discharge people as fast as possible. And also they're doctors. And so, you know, how many times have you been on an inpatient rotation trying to follow up your outpatient labs? So they already have so many roles and responsibilities. The one of learner usually is what ends up taking the back seat. And that's the thing that we really have to focus on, because that's the point of residency. And I think the other really big thing is that with COVID, we made a lot of conferences virtual, and a lot of places still have virtual conference. And so you don't have all those people who are coming virtually in person. And I think that it really affects the overall feel of the conference when you really don't have anyone in the room. So I think that kind of just the multiple roles as well as COVID, and we're still feeling the effects of COVID now.
Rebecca, I just want to say I can't agree with you more. That was a great summary, I think, of reasons why I think that it's been really hard to have great conference engagement, and just starting with attendance, for sure. I think residency is really hard. It's really challenging. We're asking more and more of our residents every day. And then on top of it, if we invite them to a conference and someone is just reading from the slides and the residents feel like, I could have just read this at home, or the level of the lecture is at a subspecialist level and they're not going to get anything out of it, or, you know, there's a lecture that's been given 15 years straight, I think the residents are not going to feel like it's worth their while. And I think it's on us to make sure that it is engaging and it does become worth their while, so that they realize, just like you were saying, Rebecca, that, you know, their job, yes, they're doing a fantastic job doing their clinical work, but this is their time to learn as well, and creating those really useful educational experiences is a requirement. And I guess I'll just say that I think that it matters for a lot of reasons. I think that, you know, if it's done right, if we do educational experiences in person, you are actually having more active learning. And a lot of the data shows that active is much better for retention, right? So even though residents want to go home, if you go home and learn by yourself, maybe you're not going to retain it as well as if we're all together. And something that we talk about a lot, and I think that you were getting here at AIM, is that you get revitalized when you learn with other people. You know, we're all feeling that here. And so that helps us feel and reminds us that we're not just a cog in a wheel, like we were, our plenary speaker was referring to this morning, and just get revitalized and maybe also get more support if you realize you're not the only person who's struggling with a topic. Together we can learn, and there's a lot of sort of hidden benefits of in-person learning. And that's the type of thing that we hope to promote as well.
Totally. And I will say, I love that y'all shouted out kind of the components of the science of learning too, and kind of active learning. We have we had an episode on that in the past if folks want to check that out. And you hit on the kind of the why, Beth, and would love to hear that from you as well, Rebecca, around like, why does it matter that this is a problem that programs are training or having trouble kind of matching the needs of their trainees in terms of engagement? And I might caveat this, you know, Molly and I have had some giggles back and forth around like, is this an example of a wicked problem, like a term coined in the literature, but specifically around health professions education is like something that's just so hard to address and has so many stakeholders and kind of, you know, it's just really difficult. And I wonder if y'all can kind of chime in on, is that the case? Is that the type of problem that we're working with? And also kind of like, why does it matter? Where do we go from here?
Yeah, I mean, I think from a practical standpoint, one of the things that we focus on as a residency as a whole is that board pass rates are actually declining. And that's actually happened specifically since COVID. So it kind of does show, again, that effect that COVID has had on conference attendance and just like overall education. And so what's actually interesting is that if you look at the board pass rates for first-time test takers, so that's our residents who are just graduating, so that's declining. But when you look at it in terms of people who've taken it to recertify, that's actually the same. So that suggests the test is not getting harder. We're just not preparing our residents appropriately. And so I think that that's something that we really feel as a program. I remember when I was a medical student applying for residency, I wanted to know how they were going to prepare me. I wanted to know that the people who went to that program were passing. And so I think that that's one of the really big challenges that we face right now. And again, just they're in residency. They're here to learn. And we can't forget that. And I, again, when it comes to patient well-being versus your own learning, our residents are going to go for the patients. So, you know, they tend to take up the learning takes a backseat. And I think the other interesting point is that, you know, you have synchronous learning and asynchronous learning. Synchronous learning is the formal learning that happens in the classroom. You know, you have an expert who's standing in front of the lecture hall and is kind of just giving this lecture, versus asynchronous is your podcast, your YouTube videos, your journals that you might be reading on the side. And I think that residents are actually using the asynchronous learning more. And so they're saying, well, if this is how I learn and this is how I learn best, I love the curbsiders. I'm just going to watch you listen to them every time that I'm coming to work. You know, that's how they're learning. And so we have to also have that in the back of our minds that, you know, there are so many resources that we can use to help just really solidify what we're teaching during those like synchronous structures.
Yes, I agree with you, Rebecca. I think that I liked your point of talking about how residents are always going to choose to take care of their patients. You know, they're hardworking, dedicated people who want to put their patients first. And that means that sometimes the conference gets put to the side. And we see this a lot too, the rise of the asynchronous learning and people feeling like, well, I could just teach myself. So why should I spend the time to come to the conference? I think, you know, we talked about those hidden benefits of the social things and the support that you feel being there. But I think it also helps standardize, right? Because not all residents maybe are as efficient as taking care of their patients, right? So they maybe never get the time to reflect on their patient cases. And these conferences are allowing them, hopefully in a protected way, some time to really think about, you know, what did I just do? Why did we make those clinical decisions? Where should I go with this if I'm the only one encountering this soon in my future as an attending? So I think, you know, that's really an important thing to kind of try to standardize the education, because even within everyone's clinical practice, hopefully you're seeing a lot of the same types of patients, but maybe not. And there might be things that we're missing. So I'm hoping that's a way to also entice residents to come back and maybe help with their, you know, with their standardized testing and things in the future too.
I'm kind of hearing, you know, lots of benefits. And also, I think you're both reflecting what probably all of us as educators are feeling across the country with our residents about challenges of getting them into conference. And I heard from kind of both of you that sounds like the culture of the program and sort of the culture of the expectation that people attend and that they are beneficial is important. And it sounds like also that protected time to allow the residents to attend is really important to help them get to conference. Are there other structural things or things that the program or an individual educator could use to help influence conference attendance? What are some of those things?
Oh, absolutely. I'll start just first by saying, if you feed them, they will come. We definitely get more residents during noon conference if we're giving them food. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing is holding them accountable. So at our program, you know, we say you have to come to over 60% of conferences that you're able to come to. So if they can't, then, you know, they can't moonlight. And so I think that the program has to hold residents accountable. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is if you're going to hold them accountable, you have to make it so that they can actually come. So at UIC, we have protected educational time, and we take this very seriously. So from 12 to 1, the ED knows that we are not admitting patients. If anyone gets a page during conference, me as the chief resident, I will answer that page and I'll say, is this an emergency? If not, they'll call you back after 1 o'clock. So we're really just doing what we can to facilitate them feeling like they can actually leave. Also having a hard stop for rounds at 11:30 and saying, you know, we need to stop so that we can go to conference, mm-hmm. put those last minute orders in so that we can run over. And so I think that, you know, I have to give credit to our program leadership, Dr. Mikulajic, Dr. Czar, Dr. Pollack, because they really help us kind of have not even just the program, but the hospital at large, and really just have supported us in doing that. And we went from having about 20, 30 people coming to conference to, at average, 70 to 90. So, I mean, these work. And you really just need a program and program directors who are willing to stand behind you and help you with that.
Super impressive. That's great. That's amazing.
We want that.
Attendance. Wow.
That percent change is ridiculous.
Yeah, that is fantastic. No, I totally agree. And I think this kind of goes back to what you were saying, Ira, is that this is sort of that wicked problem, because all those things to make that change happen required such buy-in on so many levels, right? Mm. The learners, the program directors, the staff who's going to be paging you, all of those things. So it is a very complex problem. And I think for me, when I was thinking about what are things that we can do to kind of engage people, it made me think, well, what does that mean, be engaged at conference, right? So when we're giving tomorrow, when we're presenting, we're going to be referring to this definition that we thought was pretty great from Abla and Fraumini in their work in 2019. And they specifically said that engagement is creating an environment that allows learners to have a readiness to learn and a drive to learn more. Mm. And so I think I really like that. It's like a two-part thing. It's setting the environment, but then also sparking their curiosity, their drive to learn more. And I think, Rebecca, what you were talking about with the environment being protected is super important. Not only, you know, we're very grateful at our institution to have also during the conferences, you know, our residents aren't getting paged away for codes or rapids or whatever clinical needs. But I think there's a second component to the protected time, in a way, like a protected environment, sort of that psychological safety, right, to draw learners to want to come so that when they're there, they feel like it's encouraging, it's inviting. They can dedicate their mind just to learning because they're not going to be distracted by clinical things, but also if I say something wrong, I'm not going to be made to look foolish in front of my peers, right? So that I think that's another part of being protected when you're at conference and encouraging people to be involved. So that's kind of the environment side. I guess the drive to want to learn more, that is a little bit, that's harder, right? It's a little bit harder. Some of the things that we've tried, again, is working towards active learning rather than passive learning. We also try to make it relevant to our learners. That's another thing. I think there's some data on that adult learners really want to, they engage more when the learning is in line with their goals. So those are a couple of things that we, I think, really could help engage our learners from just thinking about our conferences. And then the last thing I'll just share, I think, is that I think thinking about what do you want your learner to get out of the conference. And if a lot of times we ask our faculty to come, we'll say, can you give a lecture on asthma, right? Okay, you asked me to give a lecture on asthma. I came and gave a lecture on asthma. But really, what do we want them to take away? Do we want them to be able to understand how to interpret PFTs better? Then maybe there's a better way to teach that and make it stick and retain. So some cases, maybe it is a lecture, but other cases, maybe we need to rethink that educational experience, spend some time with a respiratory therapist, you know, look at PFT tracings, pictures, see a patient, all those things. So I think kind of really thinking with the end in mind is another way to flip conferences, that it's not always just a lecture or a didactic experience.
Totally. I'm also hearing, or kind of like the theme that it's that's coming out for me is almost around behavior change, because like there's positive reinforcement, there's negative reinforcement, there's punishment. And I feel like for both learners and educators, what we're asking for is a behavior change. And we're saying, like, can we kind of figure out the instructional strategy that will allow the behavior change? Can we figure out the kind of maybe programmatic or logistic change, whether that's positive or negative reinforcement, that will create the behavior change of even coming to a engaging lecture or one where there's readiness and drive? I wonder if maybe you both could kind of reflect on like how that maybe practically, I mean, I think you gave some of these tips, Beth, that kind of globally, but maybe practically how we do that behavior change. And obviously kind of we can get into the techniques you shared and also yours as well, Rebecca, but maybe just to dive into the practical tips of how this would work.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say I love what you said, Beth, and I think that part of that is really just having your objectives defined and making sure that you're teaching towards the objectives. And if you're not, take it out. I think from a practical standpoint, I mean, at this point, I've sat through, as a chief, I've sat through 4 years of lectures.
Yeah.
And I can say from a practical standpoint that, you know, having clear slides, defined objectives, ending on time. I mean, the second you start getting closer to 1 o'clock, people stop listening. And I think, you know, making sure that your slides only have relevant information, everything's, you're able to see everything on the slides. A lot of times people add pictures that are blurry. And, you know, if you're looking at it and you're saying, I'm so sorry, you probably can't see this, it shouldn't be on your slides. And I think that from a practical standpoint. But, you know, I think the other thing is to kind of incorporate more active learning, like you were saying, Beth. We have a great conference actually given by Ryan Knodel. He's one of our ID doctors. And it's called A Picture's Worth a Thousand Words. And he actually takes us through a chest x-ray from the moment someone comes to the hospital and kind of through their progression in the hospital. And, you know, so what this teaches us is how to look at x-rays. It shows us how important it is to look at the images for ourselves, and also teaching us what pathology looks like and how that changes over time. And this is a crowd favorite. People love it. I think also incorporating podcasts like the Curbsiders into your education is really important. So, you know, on days when maybe we don't have a lecture, we'll say, listen to this podcast, go outside. And that kind of gives people the opportunity to still learn on their own time, and be able to kind of get something out. There's always gamifications that you can do of conferences. And our crowd favorite that we have at UIC is, it's kind of like an ask the expert. So we have Dr. Fred Czar, who is a program director at UIC for over 35 years. And, you know, we kind of just give him a diagnostic problem. So we give him the chief complaint. A 73-year-old woman is coming in with shortness of breath. And kind of hearing him go through and walk through how this master clinician walk through how he thinks of cases. That's people have always loved that, food or not, just because it really gives you the opportunity to learn how to do the diagnostic reasoning, which, you know, is something that's hard to teach.
100%. You're giving me a flashback memory. So I didn't share this at the beginning, but I went to USC for medical school. And so I remember those Doctors Are lectures. And I used to think to myself, you know, when you're early on, you're like, I wish I could just get a peek into their brain. Like, how are they coming to that conclusion? I'm not coming to the same thing, right? And I see that the same way with our program director, Dr. Lisa Akayan. You're just these, like you said, master clinicians, right? And so I think that's the type of thing that the learner is craving, right? They can get facts. They can pull it up in a second on their phone. So if we can make our educational experiences really about getting that clinical reasoning, that is gold. So I love that. And I think the same thing with the chest x-ray example. Again, what should we be thinking when we look at this, right? Again, that is really gold. So I thank you for sharing that, Rebecca. That's great. And good little memory for me.
And Beth, do you want to share kind of your practical tips / maybe even techniques
to
move away from standard quote unquote lectures on asthma to maybe something that is more fun, kind of harnesses the readiness, the drive?
Yes. So we, it's interesting because when we went to, we created this workshop, we weren't setting out to say like, oh, we created any of these techniques ourselves. They already existed. But when we looked back at our most successful conferences, we noticed, wow, there's a lot of themes to these sort of techniques that we're using over time. And so we came up, we looked back and there's 9 of them that we sort of have seen that have been very effective for us. So a lot of them are things that people already use already, you know, interactivity, making things entertaining, maybe talking about a unique topic, getting your learners to buy into it as well, having multiple presenters, thinking about quality over quantity, which I think you were talking about, Rebecca. Don't go over in your time. Really take out everything that's superfluous. So all those things are great. Gamification, one of my favorites. Thinking about storytelling, emotionally sort of charged storytelling as a way to solidify memory and teaching. And then the last one is a hands-on skills practice. So those are some different techniques that we're going to go over in our workshop that we've seen be really successful in our experiences.
Do you have one of those that's been kind of the most fun for you or that you adopted that has been?
I would say, yes. So we often use them in combination, right? You can even think about it when I'm reading them off. You're like, oh, yes, we do some of these in different things. So I sort of have a trio that I tend to be my go-to, and that is usually entertaining, interactivity, and gamification. Those are my 3 go-to. And I think people who know me know I love board games, so they're not surprised about the gamification. I loved creating our medical escape room. It's very complex. I could talk about that forever.
This feels like it aligns with theme park.
Oh, totally. You're understanding me very well. This is it right here. But one technique that I want to highlight, just because I think it's very approachable and a little bit underrated and it's easy for people to start with, would be selecting a unique topic. And I think that just by selecting something that the residents have never heard of, thought about, taken time to think about, you're already piquing their interest and their intrigue before they show up. And then you sort of get the benefit of, you know, when you watch a movie for the first time, you're engaged a little bit more, you're focused. Whereas if it's the fourth time, you already know what happens. So you get the benefit of your learners already being excited and hearing about something new. I guess one example of this was we created something called a health insurance workshop, health insurance 101, if you will, because we noticed that a lot of our residents, you know, no one gets any training about health insurance, but you're a doctor. And so your patients ask you questions.
Yes.
They expect you to have a grasp of everything. So we created a conference, and you might think insurance, that's going to be really dry, but it was one of our best received conferences, and we spent time going over, you know, what's Medicare, what's Medicaid, Medicaid expansion, the exchange, private insurance, all these things. And so it was part didactic, so we had this unique topic, but then we coupled it with interactivity because there was a lot of small group discussion, and then there was a hands-on skills workshop because we went through a patient life experience when they went through all these different financial ups and downs and made them apply what they learned. And I will tell you, when it was done, we're like, we were nervous because it's a complex topic to go through it all to be the facilitator for it. But one of our learners said, I understand it so much better. When I used to think when someone got Medicare that everything was free. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, the fact that we could just, you understand it better, and that is your previous perception, and we've helped you understand it better. I mean, what's better than hearing that as an educator is that people are understanding something better. So again, unique topics, I think kind of, you know, it's an easy one that you could just pick and try to use.
I love that. And I was also really interested looking at your slides to see this Pachacucha style. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Okay. So it's called the Chit Chat Conference, where the presenter gets 20 slides and each slide gets 20 seconds. So you get a 6-minute and 40-second presentation, which sounds challenging. Mm-hmm. I'm curious how your program has used that and kind of what the response to that's been.
Yes, we love this one. Thank you for bringing it up. It's a great example of quality over quantity and multiple presenters for our techniques. I will say before I go into it a little bit more, I'd like to give a big shout out to Dr. Kim Grawl. She's one of our primary care physicians who brought this idea to our institution. So yes, we have done this several times. It is a great way to rapid fire go through topics. It's also approachable for presenters because they only have to make a 7-minute talk. You can decide how strict or not strict you want to be with the timing. We generally have not been limiting the number of slides. It kind of is self-limiting because you only have 7 minutes. And then we let them advance at their own time. But we're pretty hard with the end. And in a true Pachacucha, if you go over time, there's a big gong. You ring the gong and you literally have to stop mid-sentence and then you're taken off the stage and that's it.
Wow.
So yeah, it's very, very fun. It's super fun. I have been gonged before, I will say. But it really, the residents only have 7 minutes to pay attention and then they get a break to the next topic. And you could decide, we've done it actually just last week, we did it all on a theme. So it was all residents are teachers. And so each of us gave a talk in a different domain, you know, someone about resources, teaching pros on the floors, et cetera. Everyone just gave their 7-minute talk. But we've also done it where it's been completely random. Mm. And I think that's the one that the residents like even more because they get a taste of, you know, the red eye. We did, okay, let's go over the new vitamin D recommendations. Someone gave their pet peeves of a hospitalist. And then someone talked about art in medicine. So you can really just rapid fire go through a lot of unique topics. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
I love that. I haven't actually seen it in real life. And having sat through like a 60-minute vitamin D conference, I like the 7-minute idea.
Total. That's the thing is there's so many topics that we're dedicating a whole hour to that maybe don't need a whole hour. We could really distill it down for our learners. And this is a great way to do that.
I also feel like if you're an educator or you're alive, like, are you really living if you haven't been gonged?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. You know, it feels like that's just part of our world is, you know, like you have to, you're so motivated, you're so enthusiastic. At some point, you have to stop talking.
Yes.
I wonder, you know, with those techniques kind of, and Rebecca, the things that you mentioned, how do you all kind of really get learner buy-in with these techniques and the, you know, besides food and the other ways kind of that y'all mentioned to improve that engagement for learners during conferences?
I think a big part of it is consistency. And when residents know where to go, they know when to go, they know that their time is protected, they know that we're doing everything we can to get them there, they show up. And I think that that's something that we as leadership have to really focus on and recognize. I don't know, Beth, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think learner buy-in is some of the hardest things to achieve, for sure. Mm-hmm. It is one of the, it's a technique that we talk about, and we try to make it, it's hard, it's a balance. Because, you know, when people are more invested in the conference, when they have ownership in it, they have stake in it going well. So that is one way to get buy-in. But I think it's also a balance to then say, okay, you're already overwhelmed as a resident. You don't have time to come. And now we're saying the solution is that you should give the conference, right? So that doesn't always feel good. So I think there's a spectrum of getting your learner buy-in. It could be as simple as, you know, hey, the endocrine faculty is coming next week. We're going to be talking about thyroid disease. What have you gotten back on labs that you wish you had an endocrinologist sitting next to you about, right? And so that's it's a way that they know that it's going to be a relevant talk. We're getting some learner buy-in. But it could be all the way on the other end of the spectrum, which we do for some of our conferences. You know, if the residents are completely leading, maybe giving an M&M, ours is very team formatted, but they have ownership of how the conference goes, what's the format, and they get some guidance from faculty as well. But I think the earlier the residents can be involved or the trainees can be involved, the more invested they are. I think it also happens by proxy a little bit too. It's not only if they're presenting, but if their peer is presenting, they want to see what's going on. They're excited for them. They're rooting for them. I think it's a hard one, but if we can capitalize on what they're interested in, then they'll just naturally want to be involved.
I think the other thing, and I mean, this is something that I'm hearing so much from you, Beth, and, you know, I see as well at our own institution is, you know, you continue to be creative, continue to think outside of the box. That's what gets people to come. You know, if you have lectures that are great, continue doing those, continue to figure out how you can get your other lectures similar to those. And then honestly, be real with yourself too. You know, if there's a lecture that people don't seem to be paying attention to, they don't seem engaged, do something different the next year. I think it's really easy for us to say, this is the person who gives this talk, this is how it's going to be. But I think that that's not always the most effective way. And I think you just have to always think about what we can do and how we can be creative. Because the creativity is, again, I love that health insurance game. I kind of want to play it too. I want to see.
I'm like, tell me more about Medicare.
I know. So I think that that's kind of the key to it. And, you know, not just doing things because we've always done things that way.
I agree. We should be creating experiences that we want to be at. If we are bored, what are we doing, right? How can we expect the learners to want to be there? So yes, we should be hopefully revising with the caveat that we know that faculty are also extremely busy. So I think it really is our responsibility to help them, right? To help the learners be able to get there, feel engaged, but to help the faculty, because it might be overwhelming for them to think, I have to revamp my lecture. That's a lot of time, right? So giving them some support and guidance on that if you can.
Amazing. I think these are all really wonderful tips and things that we can take back to hopefully our programs and improve things. Rebecca, your workshop introduced the SWOT analysis to try to help make informed decisions about improving in-person educational conferences, and sounds like you were pretty successful with it. And the SWOT is designed to help assess both internal and external factors that can support or hinder something's success. Can you help explain to us how it works and how you guys used it in your program?
Absolutely. So the SWOT analysis is actually used in business a lot, and so we kind of took it from them. And so it's SWOT, so S, strengths, W, weakness. And these two things are kind of the intrinsic parts that you have in your institution. The O is opportunities and the threats. And so those are the more extrinsic. And I think one of the great things about these conferences is that you really have the opportunity to turn to your neighbor who is at a different program and say, what are the things that you're doing well? And I think a big part of it is the introspection and being real with yourself and saying, this is what works, this is what doesn't. And how are we going to adjust what we're doing to ensure that, you know, we're giving our learners the best experience that they can have? And so, you know, in terms of strengths, I think, you know, a lot of times we have great faculty, and I think, like, use those faculty. And a lot of our faculty are also chiefs. And so I think that they come in with their own experiences and their own ideas and really brainstorm with them. Weaknesses, I think, the time commitment, I think that will always be a weakness, but protecting the education time, I think, really helps that. You know, and I think opportunities, talk to other people in the field. We're not in our own silo. We all have the same problem. And I think threats, like, that's just something that as healthcare changes, it's very dynamic. And, you know, I think we're working against the system. And I think that we have to figure out how we can use the healthcare system to our advantage. And so the threats keep coming. But I think that we have enough dedicated educators in the field, like Beth, like you guys, who really are committed to learning. And so I think that really just being real with what we have to offer and what we can do really allows us to see how we can make those changes.
One thing that's coming to mind is that we spoke with folks yesterday around the learning cycle, which is actually Molly's favorite cycle. And in there, it's like experiencing, reflecting, thinking, experimentation. And I think what you just said, Rebecca, really hit me that like we are learners in the process of teaching, like how to best teach. And if you don't take the time to do the reflecting, which is what the SWOT analysis is, that your own learning as how to be a better teacher is not going to go well, or kind of you're like out of the cycle, or maybe not even in the cycle, you know, who knows. But it's just like really important to not forget about that piece, which was one of the takeaways kind of with our previous guests, was like the power of reflecting that allows you to say like, okay, that technique didn't work. Let me try the Petra Kucha situation, which I'm definitely not pronouncing correctly.
No, that's it.
But, you know, like, how can I make this better? And I'm realizing that that parallel really exists. It's, yes, we're trying to improve the learning for our learners, but we're also learning as teachers. And like, that's something that we need to do and kind of really do that introspection.
Yeah, I also would say ask your learners how they learn best. They're also a pretty big part of the picture. And I think that they know what their barriers are. They know what they want to see. And so don't forget to ask them. Don't forget to ask them for feedback on speakers, on programs that and see how those worked. Because, you know, if they love it, I think that they'll continue to come back.
Yeah, I think being nimble, if you can, with the feedback that's coming back. And, you know, sometimes it's hard. You don't want to step on someone's toes who's been, you know, a lot of times the faculty are just volunteering. So, you know, you don't want to shun people who are volunteering to help educate your residents, right? But I think maybe pairing them with someone who's been more successful might be a good strategy, or having them sit in on something that's been successfully and well received by our residents, just because we do appreciate all the time that our faculty is giving. But I agree, we have to be nimble. Same comment, if I don't want to be at this lecture, this learning experience, I'm sure that the residents don't want to. So we have to make it engaging.
I guess, are there other aspects that we haven't mentioned yet to adjusting and being nimble and kind of transforming didactic sessions that really harness an engagement that we haven't mentioned yet that y'all want to call out?
Yeah. So one of the things that we've really tried to do this year is, you know, we talk about internal medicine a lot. There's other residencies, you know, in our hospital. And I know we're within the own silo of internal medicine.
So
we operate
funny.
Within our bubble. But one of the things that we tried to do is actually do more interdisciplinary type of conferences. And so, you know, we've had grand rounds with surgery, and so we present a joint case. A lot of times, you know, as internal medicine, we're taking care of the patients in the hospital. They go to surgery, something happens, they come back, we take care of them afterwards. But it's kind of cool to be able to see what happens during that surgery. What are our surgeons thinking about? And I think in addition to giving us a broader perspective about what's going on during those hospitalizations, it also allows for more interdisciplinary interactions that are really positive. And I know for myself, you know, I see the surgeons that we gave the conference with, and it's just, you kind of build those relationships. And I think we, you know, we really need to take that into account, that there are other learners outside of internal medicine.
Absolutely. That made me think of the conference that we do. It's a similar type thing, partnering with our pathology colleagues. And, you know, people, there's less and less autopsies that are often elected to be done. But in this conference, we will review a case and then review the autopsy results. And it is alarming to me how many times the clinical presentation does not fit the actual final autopsy result. So it is a wonderful way to also see, like you said, what is the view of a different discipline, and how can we learn from that? And that is very engaging, because again, it's new, it's unique for our learners. But yeah, I think I would just say remembering to think about what your ultimate goal is and make sure that we're staying on track when we're giving an educational experience, and pick a technique, whatever that is, that you think is going to be the best way for your residents to be engaged and then retain that information of whatever you whatever you're trying to get across.
Awesome. Well, those sounded like take-home points. Yeah. But if you have more, you're welcome to share. Or Rebecca, if you want to share.
Yeah, go ahead, Rebecca.
Your take-home points.
You go.
I think just to highlight again, residents are learners first. This is a residency program. They are learners. And they will put everything before their learning because it's for the good of the hospital, for the good of the patient. And we as the educators need to make sure that we're putting them first and their learning first. I think really just doing what we can to protect that educational time and create that environment that really supports them being able to leave their clinical responsibilities and come and focus on their learning. I think being really introspective within our own programs and saying what works, what doesn't, and it's okay to change. And please, please ask the person next to you if they have any ideas at a different program, even at the same program, because I think that we're all working towards a common goal. We all have the same problems. So, you know, we should use our network as, you know, to kind of help enforce all this and to make sure that we're really putting our learners first.
Yes, I agree. I think I would just, one of my final take homes is don't give up. This is a worthwhile endeavor. This is our wonderful privilege and obligation as educators to provide educational opportunities for our trainees. It is a lot of work. It can be daunting at times, but it is worth it. I think the residents can tell when you've put in a lot of time. I think they appreciate it. And I think it's actually extremely rewarding and fulfilling for the educators as well. So even though it is some work, I think it is important. We shouldn't give up. And we should keep trying to make things more active for our learners, more relevant for our learners, and make it fun.
Yeah.
Anything that y'all would want to plug? I mean, we heard about dropping the beat, but any other kind of recent upcoming publications, resources, things that y'all have found valuable?
Yeah, so I will continue to plug the website whenthebeatdrops.org.
When the beat drops, sorry.
So you know what to do, when the beat drops.
Yes, there you go.
So what it is it's a free open access online publication that allows our residents to learn. And so it gives them scholarship because they can actually write the chapters and the topics. And then it allows them to have experts from different institutions review their work. So it's a really great way for them to kind of get their own things on their resume and peer-reviewed online publications. And then it also allows them to teach. And so I always open it up to any learner, anyone who wants to contribute, whether you're going to write something or you want to edit it. And I draw the pictures, so they don't have to worry about that. But always, always open up to that experience.
Wonderful. Wow. Rebecca, kudos to you. That's a hard act to follow. I don't have too much other than to say, let's plug Curbsiders Teach and listen to this episode. Hopefully, hopefully people enjoy it.
You're not a plant, but you are. Thank you so much for saying that. And I'm never in the CCU, but if I ever, you know, have dreams about it, I will. And just for the educational purposes, we'll check out your website.
That's absolutely amazing. Yes. We'll promote it. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. This has been so great to sit down and hear both of your perspectives. And I think just so much for me to learn and so much for our listeners to learn. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Molly. Thanks, Ira.
It's a pleasure to be it was a long time listener, first time caller. Yeah. So
we take all callers.
Yeah, that was so fun to get to sit down in person and talk about improving conference experience for our learners and get some really great tips and different perspectives from Dr. Ward and Dr. Gerber. The thing that I want to take home is trying to think more about kind of the learner engagement in choosing the topics or kind of creating the educational experiences. I know that in our outpatient clinic, we assign, or the residents sort of get to choose, but you know, they do give the lectures, but I don't think they feel like they have true power to really create different educational experiences within that. And I would love to see us be able to allow them some more freedom, or feel comfortable with some more freedom to change up how those conferences go and really take more ownership.
I love that. Big proponent of learner agency and the educational world. I think I also similarly, kind of as you reflected, Molly, was reminded, like, what Rebecca mentioned about the SWOT analysis, just really going through the curriculum and saying, what are the things that are working? What are not? What are the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats for that conference? And maybe it's time to change things up and include some, you know, pecha kucha and get people on and off the stage after 7 minutes. And I think I'm really going to kind of try to focus on that reflection piece and seeing where there are opportunities for, you know, innovative instructional strategies.
Some bite-sized learning.
Always. We know it.
This has been another episode of The Curbsiders Teach, our podcast for health professions educators. Get your show notes at thecurbsiders.com/teach. A special thanks to the Alliance for Academic Internal Medicine for making this season possible, and thanks to Dr. Matt Watto and Dr. Paul Williams for their support in this project. Thanks to the team at PodPace for editing and production support. Until next time, I've been Dr. Molly Hoidline.
And we're committed to providing you with high-value, practice-changing knowledge. And to do that, we need your feedback. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts, or contact us at thecurbsidersteach@gmail.com. A reminder that this and most episodes are available for CME credit for all healthcare professionals at curbsiders.vcuhealth.org. All you have to do is create an account. And I'm Dr. Ira Krzyzanowska. Thank you for joining us today and letting us bring you a little nugget of medical edutainment.